These are the chronicles of one man's adventures and misadventures in Asia. I am Kokujin. In episode 4, part 2 of Tales of Thailand, with special guest host, Brother Malzone. Thank you for downloading. Welcome back, loyal listeners, and welcome to new listeners. This is the second of three parts of the Tales of Thailand series. But first, the news. In the news, as I have stated previously, I believe in every episode, the companion blog at kokujinchronicles.wordpress.com contains additional content relating to each episode, as well as commentary and links. As Brother Malzone and I ended our discussion on the topic of food, I posted a favorite recipe of mine on the blog, and I invite you to go over and take a peek. You just might enjoy it. I also learned that the good folks over at Hulu, the free online movie viewing service, have 18 of Zato Ichi, the Blind Swordsman movie, available for your viewing enjoyment. There's actually a plugin to the Firefox web browser that allows one to download and save Flash movie content, just as an aside. A week ago Friday, I had occasion to go over to my local Safeway store, and I encountered, again, I don't know what the proper term is for a group of them, but a group of stewardesses, flight attendants, I suppose is the proper term. It was amazing. I came around the corner and I saw the private shuttle bus parked in front of the Safeway. And I saw one young lady get off in her distinctive green uniform. And I recognized the uniform as a EVA flight attendant uniform. She was followed by another, and then two more, and then six more. And all told, that shuttle bus had about 20 beautiful, giggling EVA flight attendants, driven by what must be the luckiest guy in the world, their old grizzled bus driver, who gets to hang out with them and take them shopping. So they were all in good spirits, and I actually spoke with one. I asked her where she was from and where they were flying into and when they were flying out. They had just flown in from Taiwan. I've added a couple of blogs to the blog roll on the at kokujinchronicles.wordpress.com. One is a blog called John in Panama. And I actually quoted his first post on my blog with some commentary, so you might want to take a look over there and see it. I also linked jtravels.net. Jay, I've been following Jay for quite a while now. Jay gets around to some fairly unusual places. And I say unusual because when you look at the types of places that most African... First of all, when you look at blogs in general, and maybe your analysis will be different than mine, but it seems like most of the blogs that are written for people of color who are traveling, most of those blogs are written by females. And I know that men are traveling, but for some reason, either they're not blogging about it or they're not posting about it. The ratio of male to female commentators on the list that I found is heavily skewed towards female representation. I'm not sure what to make of that, but I'm always grateful to find another male's perspective. So jtravels.net has been out there for a while. He's gotten some good commentary. And Jay not only writes about his travels, he also posts video. And Jay had a couple of videos last year of his visit to Bangkok and then his visit up the coast, or down the coast, I guess, to Phuket, Thailand. So I've linked to Jay. I suggest you take a look at what he's putting up, what he's offering. You might enjoy it. In more recent news, and this will be the big story of the hour, had you been around my home Thursday night, you would have heard something like this. Now, I know you are asking yourself, Kokujin, what's the problem? You're usually so calm, so cool, so collected. What could possibly bring you to such an utterance of inarticulate rage? I will tell you. Earlier Thursday, I had occasion to be on the internet. I took the opportunity to update my The spreadsheet that I maintain for cost comparisons of the various English as a second language teacher training programs. And I should point out that there are two programs that I'm primarily concerned with. One is the CELTA, and the other is the CERT-TESOL. There are other teacher training providers out there. However, CELTA and CERT-TESOL are internationally recognized. They are internationally accepted. If you have a certificate from one of those two organizations, you have a certificate that you can go worldwide with. Some of the other providers, well, I should say most of the other providers, they'll be happy to take your money. And in fact, if you have a pulse and tuition, they'll be happy to enroll you in their class. But what you're going to get for your efforts cannot be evaluated as anything approaching the acceptability and the value that you'll get from CELTA. That is a controversial statement in the minds of many people because they feel that the CELTA is not worth what you paid for it. And in fact, it's more a function of the University of Cambridge's cachet that the CELTA is evaluated and regarded as it is. I suppose that in the United States, it would be the difference between a degree, say, from the University of Washington as compared to a degree from Harvard University in the same subject. Then the Harvard name just carries weight. I'm so sorry it's that way. It's unfair, blah, 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 but it does. The CELTA and the CERT-TESOL are the premier certificates and designations that you can get if you're interested in teaching English overseas. I have posted the links on the blog again. You'll find links to the CERT-TESOL page and to the CELTA page. So as I stated, there are a limited number of providers. Depending on where you go, the cost of the CELTA varies. For instance, when I went to Thailand, the CELTA in Thailand was actually cheaper. Even having added in the cost of travel, the cost of lodging, and the cost of food overall, it was cheaper for me to go to Thailand than it was to go a few hundred miles up the road to my closest CELTA providers. And thus, that's why I'm maintaining the spreadsheet. At any rate, the conversation with Brother Malzone reminded me that I had not updated that spreadsheet in some time. So I went to the CELTA provider website, and I saw that they listed a CELTA training site in my home city, which I knew to be wrong. There isn't one. There never has been one, and there's not one now. I made a mental note to verify this information. A few hours after I initially ran across that piece of information, I had occasion to go back and double check. And lo and behold, the CELTA is indeed offered in my home city, which means that as opposed to getting on a plane, traveling thousands of miles, going through customs, paying the airfare, paying for the lodging, paying for meals out, I could have slept in my own bed, lived in my own town, eaten my own food, ridden the local bus instead of the airport shuttle / international air carrier, and gotten my CELTA certificate. And that, loyal listener, is what prompted that cry of rage that I uttered spontaneously. In the overall, what does this mean? As I reference in episode 2 of the interview with Brother Malzone, I did not actually pass the CELTA course in Thailand for a couple of reasons. One, I did not review my descriptive grammar before I left, and I should have. Two, in addition to being jet lagged, I was sleep deprived about the first third of the course because I had a back injury. My ability to concentrate and to deliver was impaired. So what does it mean now? Well, it means that my initial plan prior to coming upon this piece of knowledge had to be thrown out the window. My initial plan was to burn the boat. According to the legend, when Cortez reached the New World with his crew of fellow Spaniards, he burned his boats so that his crew would know that they were either going to succeed and prosper in that new land or they were going to die because there was no going back. To burn the boat means that you take an irrevocable action in pursuit of a goal. My burning the boat strategy was recognizing that I am older than many English as a second language schools would like to hire, recognizing that I am not the ethnicity that they would like to hire, factoring in that I probably have more teaching and training experience than most candidates, It occurred to me that perhaps the best strategy that I could find would be to take a job, preferably the English program in Korea, save my money for a year, eat lots of rice, drink lots of tea, in other words, live like a native, and after enduring a year of frugality and penny pinching, take the CELTA in Korea, and then look to upgrade my teaching employment situation. In order to fund that, I was contemplating liquidating the few assets I have and paying for the ticket and hopefully having enough funds left over to occasionally go down and buy some Korean barbecue or something as I endured that first year of frugality. But now that CELTA is in my hometown, I had to reevaluate that whole strategy. In point of fact, it makes no sense for me. It's actually cheaper for me to somehow get into that CELTA before I ever leave country. So that's the new strategy and the new plan. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to bring it off. My finances certainly do not include tuition for the CELTA, but I am creative and I will put a PayPal tip jar up on the blog in case you feel like buying Kokujin a cup of coffee or something, feel free. But I will find a way to pay for it. It's that important and it opens that many doors. My birthday is in August, and I would dearly love to have completed CELTA by then. That would also position me for the beginning of recruiting in October for the EPIC program. And I keep coming back to EPIC because it's a government program. The teachers are generally speaking well-treated, well-paid, and as opposed to working in a private English language school, EPIC teacher placements are employed in public schools. So there's a big difference there. The place to go for more information and more anecdotal review on that particular subject is Dave's ESL Cafe, and I will put a link to Dave's up as well. You'll want to go to the forums and discussion section if you're interested. That's the latest news. It's been an eventful week. I have no idea what next week will bring, but we'll deal with that as it comes. Also, you may have received, well, you should have received if you're a subscriber, a very short episode called The Official Kokujin CV/Resume. Should you know of or have an English teaching position that I should be advised of, please contact me directly via the email, kokujin.chronicles@gmail.com. Thank you in advance. Brother Malzone and I ended our discussion just as we were discussing cuisine in Thailand. And that's where we pick it up in this episode 2 of Tales of Thailand.
You're listening to a Kokujin Chronicles podcast. You'll find additional content, links, episode notes, and listener commentary at kokujinchronicles.wordpress.com.
You know, around here, you actually have to look for good food. You have to travel some to find it. And over there, it's like, and literally, it could be the guy on the corner selling that fruit in the morning. He had some of the best fruit I've ever had. You know, not hard to find at all.
Right.
But that reminds me of something, because you'd see those guys in the morning. At night, it was a different shift of vendors. And I don't even know that they had license, because these folks were like literally set up in the gutters of the streets. They would be right there. So like there's like this much space between you and traffic.
Man, and what were they selling?
Well, at night it was clothes, you know, souvenirs, hats, belts, shirts, DVD sex tapes. Don't ask me why. If you're in Bangkok buying DVD sex tapes, you got a problem.
Right.
That's all I'm going to say. You got issues.
Was there that many tourists in the area that you were in?
Well, certainly there were downtown.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see more of them downtown. But, in you know, like as far as the street food is concerned, a lot of the Thais, that's where they would normally go. So, for instance, up and around the corner from me, right next to the 7-Eleven, there were, you know, in that block, there were like 5 or 6 food joints of some kind. You know, this one here is selling some fried chicken. That one's over there doing something else. That one's over there doing some Vietnamese soup. And then you go across the street, across the bridge, or come down the other side of the street, and it's the same story. So, of course, now I was near the kickboxing stadium. So And there's also a night market over near that stadium. So there's a lot of activity in and around there all the time. Bangkok's 24/7 city. They don't shut down. Right. They may slow down, but they don't shut down.
So just like New York, just like you were saying earlier. Then.
Pretty much. Hmm. Pretty much.
All right.
You know, so I would see the tourists occasionally, but, and if he's listening, I swear on my Bible, Ray Nagin was in Bangkok. Yeah. I was coming down. I was coming down the stairs from my train, and I see this tall brother with a bald head and a three-piece coming up the stairs. I'm like, that's Ray Nagin. That's the mayor of New Orleans, right? He didn't say anything to me, but
I would advise,
I would say New Orleans government, check your receipts on those credit cards because somebody got some splaining to do. All right. Now, if he was there, I understand, but still. And in fact, you know, in addition to the tourists, and you could tell the tourists right away, mm-hmm. you know, especially the Americans, they're like, they look like they just ate a Thai person.
Right.
They're all, you know, like me, they're overweight, mm-hmm. loud, wearing their Hawaiian shorts and their shirts and their.
All right. So how did the Thai people receive the American people?
Well, I can't speak so much to how they received Americans. I know that as a rule, well, there's an expectation in Thai culture that it's all good. You know, you mm-hmm. keep a smile on your face. You don't start a ruckus. You just, it's all good. Somebody cheats you out of your taxi fare. It's all good. Now, you may come back later and beat the snot out of them, but you're going to do it with a smile on your face. And, mm-hmm. you know. So whereas a lot of folks that we could name like to start a ruckus just for the sake of having a drama, mm-hmm. They would feel ashamed for you there. I mean, if you did that, they would feel ashamed for you because clearly you were raised wrong. Mm-hmm. And they don't do that. I don't remember the name for it, the word for it, but there's a word in Thai that translates to something like, don't worry, be happy. Mm-hmm. And that's in their character, just don't worry, be happy.
All right. I mean, being a Black American, I mean, do you think you recognize any of that compared to a white American or Hispanic American? I mean, do you think they
there is a hierarchy? Yeah. Oh, they see it.
Whatever else.
Well, they see it, but it kind of breaks down like this. Okay, you're Thai or you're a foreigner.
All right.
Now, if you're a foreigner, they kind of prefer blonde hair, blue eyes. And there are some Asians, because they've been at war, they have a history that they just don't like those Asians and they don't want anything to do with them. Mm-hmm. So right now, you know, on the Thai-Burma border, they're blowing up temples and doing all kinds of stuff, crazy stuff. So there's some people that they just, you know, their neighbors and arguably their neighbors and cousins, mm-hmm. if not brothers, literally brothers and sisters that they've been in a beef with for, you know, mm-hmm. It's ancient culture.
Right.
You know, come on, America's only what, 230 years old officially?
Right.
Okay, so say 400. We go back to 1612 when the good ship Jesus dropped off that first load of slaves. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got 400 years. They've been there
thousands.
Right. So they may cater to a foreigner because he has money, but they're not in awe of him by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. They're just like, okay, you're a foreigner, you got money, I want money, and I'll play the game. But all that catering and deference just because, mm-hmm. they may do it, but it's not because. It's because they want dollars.
Or baht is
the local currency. So
What is the rate exchange over there?
Well, when I was there, it was like 33 baht to a dollar. For instance, my room.
So you're pretty good then.
Well, my room for the month was 18,000. So do the math, $600 for the month, $20 a day.
All right.
Okay. And it was a nice place. It was nice. It was clean. It was quiet. It was convenient to anywhere I needed to go. Mm-hmm. You know, do that in New York for $20.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Sounds good. New York talking about $2,000 a month.
Oh, yeah.
If not more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then add in your transportation costs. Mm-hmm. So it really wasn't the biggest mistake that I made. And anybody who's thinking of going to Bangkok, whether you're going down there to chase, to as I did, go down there and attempt to get my teaching certificate, I scheduled it too tight. I flew on a Friday, classes started Monday, I flew out the Friday, classes ended.
And if I'd been smart, I would have stayed two or three extra days on both ends, because there was, you cheat yourself otherwise. You know, now when I get to a new place, I like to get out on the ground, walk around, you know, kind of just do a little walking tour of the perimeter to see what's out there. And I did. And, you know, it just, for instance, just getting on the train one stop puts you in a whole different world. Two stops from where I got off would have dropped me at the Royal Palace. Two stops. And, you know, the Royal Palace is like, that's not just a place for tourists to go. That's every Thai person. It's like going to Mecca. If you're in Bangkok and you're Thai, you're going to the Royal Palace. You got to go. Just, you know, to go by and throw a flower in front of the palace for the king. Praise be upon him.
Right.
You know, so, but I did see everybody there. It was very cosmopolitan. For instance, in my training class, we had, and I don't know where all these guys are coming from, because, you know, you don't normally think, you think of Thai Bangkok, you think, okay, Thais only. No, it's a major hub of getting anywhere in Asia, right? And Asia, including New Zealand and Australia, because they're right, they're neighbors. So you see a whole bunch of Australians, a whole bunch of New Zealanders, but they had refugees in town from Nigeria, from Kenya, we had an Afghan translator in my class who he was there learning his fourth language, I guess, because he already spoke English, he spoke Afghani, he spoke some other dialect in Arabic, and he wanted one more language.
All right.
And I asked the Africans, you know, I said, how the hell do you wind up in Bangkok, freaking Thailand? It's like, well, my brother, the UN said you can stay in the refugee camp or you can get on the plane, go to Bangkok, start your life. So
here I am.
He got on the plane,
right?
You know, and in a case like that, you'll never be Thai. You're never going to become Thai. Mm-hmm. I don't care how many generations you've lived there.
So they don't accept, you know, allow other foreigners to become citizens.
Well, they do after a whole bunch of hoops and jumps, but they make it hard. For instance, a foreigner cannot legally, and I think this is still true, cannot legally buy property in Thailand for himself. Mm-hmm. A Thai person has to buy it. All right. So they're working all kinds of deals behind doors to set up proxies and put it in the wife's name and blah blah blah, but it can be done. But it doesn't happen often.
Difficult, then, huh?
Yeah, it doesn't happen real often.
Now I heard, once again regarding Thai, I heard the climate, or I heard there's a lot of pollution because of less controls and things of that sort. Is that true? I mean,
well, there's definitely a noticeable difference in the types of activities that you can see during the day. For instance, all those food vendors I told you about, almost every one of them was burning hardwood charcoal or charcoal of some kind. So, you know, and that I could discern, they're not licensed. They're just like, I'm picking that road. I'm gonna set up my little shop and I'm gonna do what I do. I'll be gone by 12. Come through, get your coffee tomorrow.
All right.
You know, so I couldn't. Now they may be licensed, but there was some obvious heavy industry within the city that I could see from my window or see from the train window as I was passing by. And this is right in the city, but there were definitely some visible differences depending on where you were. I was more or less in the middle of the city, if I understand the map correctly. And certainly my school was more or less in the middle of the city. But the closer you got to the airport, where you're away from, I mean, you know, out there, the trains don't even run that far. You're talking about riding on a bus or something. Out there, you could tell that this stuff hasn't been upgraded in a while. And you talk about building codes and maintenance violations. If you're walking down the steps next to the building, you could see literally all the wires that wire the electricity to that building, because they weren't hidden. They weren't wrapped like we wrap ours. It's like, you know, you look out there, it's like 3 million wires going here. And you say, okay, well, that one's probably that one's air conditioner. And that one's probably that one's phone. Right. It's just like it was. You know, different standards.
Right, different standards.
But I tell you one thing that got me, and it got me good. The door entry to most homes is higher than it is here. So I step into your home. How high is that barrier between the outside and inside? Yeah. 2 inches, right?
2-3 inches, okay. Right.
Because they don't want evil spirits coming into their home. It's like 6 or 8 inches. And so are the curbs off of their sidewalk. So the first morning I'm in Bangkok, I'm walking around and I'm still a little jet lagged and I'm overwhelmed by sights and sounds and smells and I'm not really paying attention. And I have my briefcase with me. So I stepped off one of these curbs and you ever like go down the stairs in the dark and you either miss that last step or you come up on that last step one step early?
Right.
Right. Well, I put my foot out and 2 inches down, I didn't feel anything and I went over.
Oh, man.
And I'm quite sure it was like down goes Frazier, because I hit hard, but I caught myself because I had my briefcase with the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a 3-point catch.
All right.
And I ganked my back. I didn't know it then. I didn't know till the next morning when I tried to do some heavy lifting, like breathe.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I totally strained my lower back muscles and I was in agony for like the next 10 days.
Oh man.
Yeah. So that's really rough. You know, I'm like, oh shit.
Right.
Christ.
Now, you know, you're talking about beautiful woman, which we all love.
Ubiquitous ain't the word. They were everywhere.
You're talking about,
you could break your neck looking at them.
You're talking about good food, you know, a little controversy in the streets, but is that a place you could see yourself settling down?
I could, yes.
All right.
If I were able to get over there and maybe get on train to a job teaching English or something, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't, my preference would not be to live in the middle of the city. Too much temptation for one thing. You know, they wrote that song One Night in Bangkok for a reason, because there was so much temptation over there. And if you're not a strong man and you have some self-discipline, more than one man has gone over there and lost his mind. Just, I'm speechless because there's just so much you could get into that you could dissipate yourself real easy.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, that internal strength and discipline, it better be there before you come, because otherwise you're going to break yourself.
All right.
But I could see it, you know. I know that a lot of foreign culture is popular. So when there's guys coming through and like throwing a hip hop show or whatever, yeah, they will fill the club for that.
Hmm.
You know.
Well, excellent.
Not my particular cup of tea, but
right.
I'm flexible.
So how do you do it with your educational program? So you went over to go to school. So how was that?
I didn't pass the course.
Mm-hmm.
On 2 points. One, I should have done more prep before I went, and I didn't. You know, review those grammar rules, because trying to learn the grammar and trying to plan a lesson is not going to happen. Plus, like I said, I wasn't sleeping well at all. That dang back injury just racked me up.
Were the classes being taught by English speakers or by?
Well, the way the CELTA works is there's a school that is contracted with Cambridge University to say, okay, we're going to teach teachers how to teach. Hmm. We're going to use real life students for them to teach too.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time that the students are being taught English, the teacher's being taught how to teach.
Hmm.
And CELTA and CERTESL are the two major organizations that they're the two internationally recognized and accepted organizations. There are other Teach English as a Second Language, Teach English as a Foreign Language certificates out there. But for the most part, they're not internationally accepted. Those two are, CERTESL and CELTA are.
All right.
And there's a limited number of places you can go to get it, including some in the States. But what I found interesting was when I first started looking into taking a CELTA, I said, okay, I set up a spreadsheet. The closest one to us is up in Vancouver. That would have cost about $4,000 to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Actually more than that, because it costs a heck of a lot more to rent an apartment for a month or rent a, you know, even go to the YMCA for a month. It's like $900 just for a place to live.
Right.
So it's only $600 in Bangkok.
Mm-hmm.
I found out that, okay, Vancouver's the closest. The next cheapest one stateside is down outside of Houston, Texas.
Hmm.
And even with all that, even though, you know, 45 minutes up the road here, or I think it's like 2 hours to fly down to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
It was still cheaper,
really,
to go to Bangkok. So,
man.
Hell yes. I'm like, what?
All right.
Damn right I went to Bangkok. I'm going to go back again if I can.
I heard that. That sounds good. I might be going with you.
Well, you know.
Can I join you?
You put the dollars together. We'll make it work.
All right.
That's you know, do like some team teaching. Have to open our own studio or open our own school or something.
Oh, yeah.
This seems to be a prime spot to pause the interview with Brother Malzone. As I have indicated previously, and with no feedback to the contrary from my loyal listeners, I'm trying to keep these podcast episodes to about the 20-minute mark. Obviously, in this case, I've gone well over that. I trust you'll indulge me this once. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with a better understanding of grammar and a new episode. Thanks for listening.
Kokajin Chronicles is recorded, edited, and mixed with free, open-source software in Ubuntu Studio. This episode was mastered May 1st, 2011, and featured the musical artistry of Scion from the Smoky Jazz Dub album. This album, and thousands of others, are available free at www.jamendo.com. Until next time, peace, love, and harmony.